football on off the ball.
Toby, I'm just a little bit standoffish, to be honest. And I just said that to the lads in the dressing room. I thought, yeah, we're getting too much respect. And for me, on a football pitch, when you give teams too much respect, it's a fear. Yeah, didn't like it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Yeah, you're welcome to episode 87 of The Racing Pod and Off the Ball with Johnny Ward and Tom Malone. It's getting harder and harder for yours truly and JD to be in the same room at once these days. It's not that we're not getting on, it's just that we live such busy, busy, full, eventful lives at 1 o'clock on a Friday anyway, it seems. Yeah. That's fine. It's like as if Bugsy's taken over the show, and that's fine because, to be fair, he's just great, and he's doing a great job. And we've had an absolute bombshell of a news this morning at around about 8, 9 o'clock, which we'll get to very shortly. So we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, and crack. The first half of the podcast each week is free to air, and the second exclusively for members. Be sure to sign in by going to offtheball.com/join. This week for members, we will focus on Saturday's action at Galway and Goodwood. And we'll also get Tom's charity bet, and we'll be talking to Sam Norris from William Hill second half of the show. It's been a really, really intriguing week at Goodwood and Galway. So this morning I get a text, and this is one of these sad sort of journalist stories that nobody cares about whatsoever. But I get a text. I've just been told that Thurles Racecourse is closing, and I was trying to put my 13-month-old child to sleep at the time. It was around about 9 o'clock in the morning. So like, I need to get this story out. But then by the time he fell asleep, the story had actually broken. So it did get out very quick. There was no rumour whatsoever. It was a statement from Thurles that came out this morning from the Maloney clan. Thurles has been racing for the guts of 300 years or something like that. It was called Ireland's all-weather racecourse before Dundalk came into existence because of its ability to weather rain in particular. And Tom Malone, this was really, really kind of a bolt from the blue this morning. And it was obviously the year also, we've had the year that had the tragic death earlier on this year of Michael O'Sullivan after a fall at Thurles. And a lot of people are speculating that, you know, maybe the family found that hard to deal with. We don't know. We only have the statement from Thurles so far. But we've, interestingly, just before we came on air, Bugsy, we had HRI issued a statement in which Suzanne Eade, the CEO, concluded by saying, "I will be seeking a meeting with the Maloney family in the near future to discuss their position." So anyone who assumes Thurles will never race again, I would hope and I would suggest that that may not be the case. What was your take on it?
Just absolute shock, Johnny. I mean, absolute shock. As you mentioned, the race of Thurles for about 300 years. It's an absolute staple of winter racing. It's a family shop. It's the Maloney family shop, and it's magical because of that. It's so not corporate. You know, even you get like a big ham dinner when you go there on a winter Thursday. It's just a totally unique racecourse experience that were very much, you know, they were very much paddling their own canoe, you know, unfortunately for them. And I imagine, look, the pressures of doing business in this economy, trying to be a racecourse these days, the rising costs, as they mentioned in their statement as well, and allied to, you know, the tragic passing of Michael O'Sullivan. I just thought maybe together as a family, just went, you know what, this is might be a lot more work than it's worth. And, obviously, everyone's taken, I mean, as you mentioned, that HRI statement, everyone's taken by surprise, including HRI, because they obviously had no idea about it. Thurles still had 11 fixtures to come this year. So, and they're licensed to race until the end of the year, at least. I don't say that as if there's an issue. I'm just pointing out that it's not like, you know, there was some impending disaster. There wasn't. You know what I mean? They're licensed to race at 11 fixtures scheduled. And it's clearly a very personal decision that's been made. And you kind of applaud them for that as well. You know, they could have said, oh, we'll finish out at the end of the year. We'll, you know, there's a no on. We're putting our family first. We're putting this news out there. We're taking time to ourselves. And there's no doubt it's an incredibly arduous experience to run a huge venue like Thurles. You know, they have they've with climate change and with the way the ground is going, that, you know, it's very difficult to imagine to maintain a watering system and maintain the ground. I mean, the sheer expense of it must be absolutely incredible. So look, the stress of that, the year they've had, the position the girls are in their lives as well. Maybe they just said, you know what, we'll pull stumps now and everyone's happy and we'll go from here and see what happens. But it's a big loss. The track is brilliant. It's always been well spoken of. You know, you talk of riders from all generations say, well, whatever about people, you know, would kind of slag the stands or whatever because they're fairly basic. But the track itself has always been a point of pride for Thurles, and, you know, brilliant horses and riders over generations have, you know, started their lives there or taken paths there on the way to great success.
Yeah, and the statement was from Rena Maloney, who, you know, spoke about Pierce Maloney and, you know, then spoke about her, as well as speaking about Pierce, her husband, spoke about her daughters, Patricia, Helena, Marie and Kate. I would have dealt with Kate a bit at Thurles. She's very helpful to me when I was working at the track in recent years. And we've also had Willie Mullins talking to PA, who said it was a huge blow for Irish racing. And he said, Thurles is a track that always had beautiful ground in the winter when other tracks couldn't. Now, I'm a bit like that woman in Little Britain who literally everything reminds her of the widow who everything reminds her of her husband. Like, oh, he used to do that. I'm like that with climate change. So everything at the moment reminds me of climate change. But this is a story that does relate to climate change. And you're right to bring it up, Bugsy, because Thurles found it harder, as any racetrack would this winter, when there was like so little rain after 2024 had an unbelievable amount of rain, such that I was wondering would some of these tracks even race in the flat at all this year. There was so meetings were called off. Wexford and Gorn were struggling to name, but others this year, then consistent with the climate crisis, you don't know what you're going to get. And they didn't have a watering system per se in place. And so they found that a little bit more difficult. And I'd imagine this year was very difficult for Thurles in relation to something that they probably never had to deal with before. But in the winter, they had to ensure safe ground, which was something that was difficult for them within the limitations of what they had.
Yeah, and look, maintaining ground once it kind of goes on you is incredibly difficult. I just remember the back end of the summer last year, and then they never really got a break. Because the problem with the rainfall at the moment, and we don't want to get into the discussion about climate, but Ireland's average rainfall is still fine. The problem is the volume of it and the pattern of rainfall is the issue. So the volume of rainfall averaged out is okay, but
good is a good example yesterday.
Exactly. So you're getting incredibly long periods of dry spells followed by intense rainfall. So again, as the man says, if you're heading the oven, your feet out the door, on average, you're fine. Like, but that's really what's happening here, that the averages are okay. But, and then if you are a smaller track like Thurles, that wouldn't have, you know, maybe the level of ground staff required to just maintain that ground on a consistent, constant basis. You know, you need to invest in a reservoir. You need to invest in a huge amount of machinery just to keep that surface consistent throughout the off season as well. So that when it comes to, you know, the racing and things like that, it's just a huge, huge amount of work, and that should never be underestimated. And it's certainly not something I'd wish on anyone. I mean, an example of this is Longchamp, whereby Longchamp took their eye off the ground when they were going through the refurbishment. And so when they refurbished, they actually completely ignored the track. And then sure enough, once they started to race again, it was like, well, you guys haven't been maintaining the track. It's like, well, why do we need to maintain the track? We haven't been racing. It's like, no, you need to maintain the turf constantly. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to speak to a few people who deal in that turf management. And it is an absolute science in itself. As any farmer or anyone who works the land will tell you, you know, your soil is just so important to maintain. And it's no different when you're a racetrack.
Yeah, I feel at the moment there's an element of speculation in relation to why this happened. I was told in recent months or years that the likelihood was that Irish racetracks would close in the near future because of the rights deal, which is basically a per racetrack agreement in terms of turnover online and so on. That, you know, there are alarming trends in terms of betting turnover. I don't understand that to have anything to do with this. I would speculate that it is, as the statement implies. It's a family-run racetrack. The complexities of running a racetrack you would not believe, and I'd imagine there's a huge truth to exactly what's said in the statement. And obviously, it's been a really trying year for the racetrack. And I suppose right now it's sort of maybe wrong to speculate as to it, but just from my perspective, I've a great fondness for Thurles. It was very, very antiquated in terms of facilities, but ultimately a racetrack is about the ground, really, and Thurles was terrific ground practically right until the end of the Maloney era. It was such a brilliant land in that part of the country, and the ground was the consistent factor, very, very rarely called off. And it was a victim this year of climate change, 100%. And in some respects, I do feel that money spent on redeveloping racetracks could be spent in other ways as well. It's not all about these jazzy facilities for spectators when, you know, you only have a few meetings a year, and the key is the ground. And it did have, as Bugsy said, it did have this real antiquated kind of charm to it, and the same characters there, apart from those who got too old and passed away. That's what Thurles is. It was like the same characters on a Thursday, and a real, real National Hunt feel to it, and good horses running there as well. So we'll see what happened with Thurles. Well, one place that is showing no sign of stopping, Bugsy, is Galway. And I tell you what, we had remarkable drama in the Galway Hurdle yesterday. I don't know, with these races, I'm almost defeated before I started. I give a horse who predictably ran badly in the race. The first and second, you could absolutely make a case for them, but I found the race very, very tough. But it wasn't until I'm watching on Racing TV and Ruby Walsh is analysing the drone footage of the first and second and the subsequent reversal of placings because of interference that I realised how pronounced it was. I thought it was compelling TV, brilliant stuff from Ruby. What did you make of Endowie getting the race from the ultimate, from the first pass to post, but ultimately the runner-up?
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of evoke the old football pundit, go, I've seen him given, but it was probably the right decision. But if you watch racing on the regular, they don't get given so often. They just don't get given. So I mean, no means is going to appeal this.
Yeah,
and you can absolutely see why. And
I
if
wanna,
you have a volume of evidence, you'd be like, well, this wasn't given. This wasn't given. This wasn't
the
given.
The whataboutery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I want to get you on this. So my initial impression was, right, watching the, I actually think I saw the head on anyway first, and I said that's pretty harsh, but. And this is where
the overhead, the drone cam overhead.
And as I was like typing onto WhatsApp, pontificating about what I considered a harsh call, Ruby Walsh comes on the airwaves and makes an open and shut case. And that got me thinking, as Ruby Walsh often will, what the stewards did here in reversing a head result that was, did the first horse deserve to win the race? It's debatable. I don't think we'll ever know the right answer. What the stewards in Galway did on Galway Hurdle Day on the last day of July in 2025 was made a call that they were basically punishing the jockey on the winner for not taking corrective action. And then when there was a doubt, they rewarded the jockey, J.W. Kennedy, for doing the right thing. And in that, I feel they have set a precedent that's a very, very good precedent.
It's a very good precedent. It shouldn't be a precedent, really, at this day and age. You know what I mean? That should be the way things go. You can see the jockey on Helvic Dream, and he just keeps going in his left hand, and he just wants to change his hands ever so slightly, pull his stick through. If he does that, he never stops driving. It's very easy for us to say we're not in the thick of a drive and finish for a Galway Hurdle.
But this is live sport, Bugsy. I don't want to go to a race meeting where there's a 5-1 on shot and it feels like everyone in the race course knows what the result is before the race even starts. I want an element of jeopardy. And what happened here was Jack Kennedy took on Donna Myler, and if the race were run tomorrow, maybe you'd have a different result. This is the whole point of live sport.
Yeah, and I look, a drive and finish is just what you want to see. A race like that, that's the handicapper's job, to create this situation where a load of horses are tightly in a finish, and that, you know, the difference comes down to an absolute nostril. Yeah, it was probably the right decision, but you're, as I said, you've seen him given, you've seen him not given, and we just ultimately you want kind of consistency going forward. Great finish to the race, though. And in fairness to JD, he did tip up Endowie last week as well. So I'm sure he gave it an extra roar when Brian, pause for dramatic effect over the tannoy in Galway to say the result was reversed, which RT captured live, which was very well done too.
Oh, yeah, and fair play to JD. In a previous life, one of the biggest wins I've ever had in a horse race was betting on an inquiry. And would you believe I got a lift home straight to my local bar from one of the stewards who was involved in the stewards inquiry. Purely coincidence. It was one of these you had to be there moments. And ultimately, I squandered all the money. Filey Bay was the winner of the Connacht Hotel QR Handicap, the 640 in Galway on Monday. I love this, Bugsy. This was all Galway. It was a big punting owner, or certainly was. It was a show punt, sevens from 14s, lands the gamble for Emmett Mullins.
Love that. Love that. Now, obviously, I tipped up a Randy and put him up as my charity bet, so I wasn't that happy at the time, but we got over it.
Ran a blinder.
Ran a blinder, look, place as well. So we got some money for the charity, thankfully. But look, I love those stories. When we were chatting last week at JD, you're just talking about those Galway stories. And that's the other thing, Nadawi's owner has Earl's Bar there in Galway as well. Like, you know, what a great added element to it. I mean, imagine what the vibe must have been like in there last night that way. But you just see these stories. You had the Ty Pink Ribbon Syndicate as well for Jerry Keane had a winner yesterday too. You know, they had no luck. They haven't got a run at all with Crystal Black this year after having a brilliant year last year. So great to see him land a pot for them as well, for Jerry Keane too. And yeah, it's just off. I found it difficult to back a winner, but I've most definitely enjoyed Galway this year.
Do stick around for the second half of the show. I've actually got off Spotify, switched to YouTube Premium today for moral reasons on the basis of what Spotify CEO is spending his money on, so on and so forth. And I've found YouTube Premium pretty excellent so far, actually. And the off the ball stuff is just so smooth on it. And you will get, if you subscribe on our various channels, you will get second half of the show. We will just talk briefly as well about Goodwood. And very best of luck as well to Thompson Milo, who has his Galway debut today in the 7:10. So that's another thing to look forward to. Goodwood has been, speaking of climate change, I mean, I was watching the horses go down to the start yesterday on the TV. I was like, this looks like that scene at the end of A Serious Man, the Coen Brothers movie, or The Machinist, that mad movie that Christian Bale is in, or any movie you can think of that has basically a massive, massive storm slash like biblical rain on the way. And it did arrive just as they were passing the post yesterday. But it's been, for the first race, it's been a cracking week of action in Goodwood otherwise, though.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. The bizarre race that was the Sussex with Kirat winning that.
If somebody's listening in, describe to him or her what happened.
So Kirat and the Ballydoyle Pacemaker jumped off in front. They went maybe sort of 15 lengths clear. Field of Gold, Henri Matisse and Rosalian, who were the top three in the market, then sort of sat in a line well off them. And let them go. Look, it's obvious Field of Gold never ran his race. He pulled out lame the following day, but they waited too long to go after the pacemakers. The second Ballydoyle pacemaker just fell away and left Kirat there, at which point Ryan Moore and Sean Levy kind of discovered, oh, geez, we better go after this horse, but it's Goodwood and front runners can get away off the front. And they never got there in time. And we had a 150-1 winner by Showcasing win a Group 1 Sussex Stakes when, obviously, you know, Field of Gold trailed home, I think, fourth in the end. Obviously, he ran the race and was found to be lame the following morning. Hopefully, he's fine, but my God, you know, it's one of those, it was very much after you, Claude, situation where we had all the jockeys kind of looking around for the odds on favour, not reacting to what was going on in front of them. And in fairness to you know, Sean, after the race, he did say, geez, I should have won that. I should have gone after him a bit sooner.
Well, here's the thing, right? I was on this show recently giving out about the gambling regulator and all of that. But I, you know, some of the issues with betting at the moment, I think you're almost ashamed to say I like to have a bet. Having said that, right, it is very, very hard. And one of the dangers of being involved, if you like betting on horses, it's very hard to keep your cool when things are going against you. And Galway and Goodwood can be a week where ultimately people start chasing their losses because it can be a very trying
There's
week.
Nowhere worse to try. No, there's nowhere worse to
but,
try it.
But Jesus, if you've backed Rosalian here, right, so you in hindsight, I wasn't really looking at the betting in the race. There's no way Rosalien should be 11-2 against Field of Goal 1-3. Rosalien is an exceptionally good four-year-old. Field of Goal is
now,
not...
He's the one thing I would say in that is that because he's a four-year-old, he got like 10 pounds. You get an enormous weight. It was like Camford Cliffs and Frankel. Like, yeah, so Camford Cliffs obviously had to try and give Frankel 8 pounds well when he was a four-year-old against three-year-old. And that pattern throughout that time... You kept repeating yourself. We ended up having a couple of good miners a few years in a row, and then the older horses ends up having no chance against the progressive 3-year old when they meet in the Sussex. So I can understand that. And I think you only had 7 runners as well, didn't we? So you're getting a kind of but I still get your point.
Yeah, my point is I'm probably wrong by saying 11-2 and 1-3 was wrong, because that was the odds. That's exactly what the market made them. So in a race like this, the market should be right. If you go home and if you go into your local pub that night and say, how'd you get on? I couldn't get over the price Rosalien was. 11-2, I met at a match against Field of Gold. How did he get on? He beat Field of Gold by 4 lengths. He was beaten in neck by 150-1 shot. It was the biggest SP in a Group 1 in like 200 years or something. And you have to get up and you have to dust your proverbial self down and get on with it again. And that is punting on horses. You get these ridiculous...
It's as bad a beat.
He's beaten the French Guineas winner
and the Guinea and the Irish Guineas winner.
He's beaten by a horse who wasn't even trying. He was there to make the running.
Stuffed in a handicap at Ascot last time out.
And then was cutting the betting for a handicap subsequently under a penalty. Okay, we've had a riveting first half to the show as ever. I'm going to give a horse yesterday. I'll give you a winner yesterday, hopefully. I'll give you a horse tomorrow, right? And it's Ray, which is the Irish for ready. Ray is so well named in the 5:35 Galway. This, as I said in the Racing TV slot, this almost looks too obvious. Sometimes bets that look too good to be true are too good not to be true, which is seemingly what I wrote. That's Ray in the 5:35. But if you want Bugsy's charity bet, you're going to have to wait for the second half of the show. That's how we roll. And the second half of the show is obviously for members. And if you are looking for more, we'll look at Saturday's cards, Goodwood and Galway, Kraken Action, and Tom's charity bet. You have to go to offtheball.com/join to subscribe and get the full podcast with all our racing tips, insights, and stories from this week's action.